the buzzer after hours. Who says nothing good happens after 2 a.m.? Music, stories, just dropped releases. The after party, dates from hell. Nothing is taboo. Join us Wednesdays, after hours.
Hey, Shay here, the buzzer after hours. Welcome and enjoy. Episode 4. Tonight we are hanging out with Ronnie Robson. Anything goes. We talk about his new podcast, Rhythm Section Rockcast, an exciting podcast series celebrating the history of bass and drums in contemporary music. Hosted by none other than Ronnie Dog Robson. Ronnie is a professional session and touring bass player, cinematographer, producer, and co-owner of Amplitude Films Incorporated. He has been in the music business for 37 years, studied classical piano from the age of 7 with the Royal Conservatory of Music, moving on to guitar studies at 12. At 19, he began working in multiple Toronto-based recording studios as an engineer, session musician, forwarding into stage and tour managing with various acts to opening his own production company, aligning with various artists in both concert, television, and documentary productions. To date, Ronnie has recorded with current and or ex-members of Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, Whitesnake, Hollywood Monsters, Deep Purple, Megadeth, Alice Cooper, Prophecy, John Lennon, Platinum Blonde, Jeff Beck, Gatto, Jethro Tull, and several other top bands. Wow, just wow. This is a great show. So thank you very much for coming on the show. Today we have Ronnie Dog Robson. Hi, Ronnie.
Hey, Shay.
How are you today?
You know what? I'm living life to the fullest.
It's crazy. You're quite busy.
Well, you know what? Yeah, you know, I am, and things are about to get busier, which is great for me.
Tell me a bit about that.
Well, you know what? I'm working on a few music projects, like just helping out other people with their music right now. And in about another 6 weeks, I'm heading into I also do, you know, being a bass player, being, you know, who I am, I also do film, and a great chef asked me to, he wanted to get back on television, and he reached out to me and I said, okay, let's make this happen for you. So I'm working on that right now as well. You know, like behind the scenes things, post-production, pre-production, for post-production rather. And I'm having fun with it. So everything's great.
And those are demo tapes to submit to a network, or is he going to be going on the air?
Yeah, basically what it is a pilot for his show. And I mean,
that's right. The pilot. I made the wrong term.
That's cool. But what it is we got a fantastic, absolutely fantastic set that we're going to be working with. It's on a golf course. It's actually part of a golf course. But what we're doing is working with them, setting it up. That's how we first started. And we only had one meeting, and all of a sudden, you know, like everyone's mind is going everywhere. Here's what we want to do. Here's what we're going to do. And, you know, we're all in tune together to make it happen. And we're going to make it happen. Definitely going to make it happen. It is a fantastic idea. It's a fantastic show. He's a fantastic chef. He's probably Canada's leading barbecue chef. I mean, you know, 21, I think it's 21 cookbooks he has out. So,
wow. Can you share his name?
Mr. Ted Reeder.
Wow.
Yeah.
It'd be great, and love to see the show. You yourself are quite a chef.
Well, yeah, you know, I love to cook. I love to make people happy, and that's my biggest thing. You know, I love to, my kitchen is the center of the household. Besides my studio,
yeah,
it's my kitchen.
Yeah, well, you can see that. You sort of outdo me, huh? Yeah.
And you know what? Thank you for noticing. A lot of people notice that I like to cook, and they always say, you know, I get a lot of private messages too. So, can I have the recipe for that? It's like, yeah.
Oh, really? I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I have to hold back sometimes, but I love to cook. It's actually my Zen time.
Oh, yeah. Mine too.
Yeah. I Zen too. Out.
Yeah, mine too. It's like, leave me alone. I'm in the kitchen. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's funny, because sometimes my wife will come into the kitchen and like all of a sudden an argument will start. It's like, get out. You know, it's either you or me. Go, you know. And we have fun with it sometimes together. She's a great girl. Yeah.
Yeah, we do it too. I'm the chef. Doug's more the barbecue, but he's an incredible baker.
Is he?
Yeah, and he can make Yorkshire pudding like you wouldn't believe.
No way.
I'm being serious. It's outstanding. It's like the best. So, yeah, I get out of the kitchen.
No, that's good. Yeah, you know what? You know what? I know your husband. I think he's a fantastic guy, but you know what? He never mentioned Yorkshire pudding before. And you know what? And now I'm gonna hit him on that one. I'm gonna say, you know what? I'm coming over.
Yeah,
what do you want me to bring?
You know, tell him to make your birthday cake. You can make the best chocolate cake you've ever tasted.
Oh no, chocolate's my favorite. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna keep him busy.
Yeah. Do it. Yes. So let's get into the music.
Okay.
What started your music journey? Because you've been around for quite some time.
Well, I have. I have and I haven't. I did the safe zone, and what I call the safe zone. And it was like, okay, I was brought up on music. My family was very music oriented. I did the Royal Conservatory of Music thing with piano, mostly self-taught with guitar. And you know what? It was always a hobby to me. Not so much a hobby when I was younger. It was like, you know, a love of life. When I could walk into the kitchen and I could play a song on acoustic guitar, or when someone was around and I could do a song on piano that made them happy, just much like cooking. It made them happy. I was happy. And then later on, I started playing in bands, you know, like I started doing my thing. And it kind of evolved, but I knew what I was in for, you know what I mean? If I were to pursue the music career, how it was, I mean, I worked in recording studios, and I would have great bands come in and they would talk about, you know, what deals that they just made. And, mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to, invest in time now and not get anything back tomorrow? So, and it was kind of a period for me where I went, you know what? I am not going to do this. Excuse me. But I started working for the city of Toronto, and I started to do, you know, like I was in music, I was in film, either, you know, being a videographer or doing post audio or things like that. And different bands and filling in, you know, if someone wanted a bass player to come out or a keyboard player to come out, I would learn the set list and I would go out. And mm-hmm. it was kind of a comfort zone, knowing that, you know, I know all kinds of fantastic people, all kinds of what we call stars, or, you know, from around the world. But and having that professional camaraderie with them. But it was really cool just for me to be me, to be who I wanted to be and where I wanted to go. And with the music industry, man, I saw it years ago where it was heading. And I just kind of went, okay, I'm not into it right now. And it wasn't until later in life where I started, you know, jamming and recording with some great people. And you know what? My life is fantastic. I love it. And it's a never-ending education for me. I'm always learning stuff, Shay. Always.
Well, it's definitely an industry where you are learning daily. I could say that. So you like music and started getting into music to make people happy.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Do you know that Robert Plant felt the same way?
Really, eh?
He says quote is, whole idea of music from the beginning of time was for people to be happy.
There you go.
So that's how he sums up music, and you're in good good club there.
Well, I'm in good company. Thank you, Mr. Plant. and everyone that knows me knows I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan. So yeah. There you go, man.
Yeah, that's a start of my journey in rock too.
Yeah.
So you started on guitar. When did you transfer to the bass?
You know what? I started playing guitar. It was mostly self-taught, you know, like I was jamming along with radio and I would, you know, back in old school days where you'd set up your cassette next to the radio and you'd wait for a song and I did that kind of thing for years. And then all of a sudden I started jamming with a friend of mine who lived very close to me, Steve Jacket. And he was maybe 10, 12 years older than I was. And I think he really dug my sister, and that was how we got together.
That happens.
Yeah. And I started jamming with him. And he had different instruments lying around the house, his house. And this was in Thurstonia Park. This is in between, in the Kawarthas, in between Lindsay and Bob Cajun on Sturgeon Lake. And I would walk to his house. And sometimes I'd call him and say, hey, you know, are you there? He'd say, go, God, come over. So I would go over and we'd jam. And he kind of taught me how to play drums too. Like he was, but the thing was, is he was always wanting me kind of here, play a bass track to this. Like, you know, I play his bass and he had a, like a Fender Precision and, we would rock out, you know, he would like, can you do this song? Let's do this song. Let's jam this. Or he'd start something and I would follow in. But what happened was I thought, okay, you know, this is cool. And I go back on guitar and after a little while, I kind of like I gained more experience and I gained more confidence in six string. And I started playing with other people around my neighborhood. And I always tended to go back to bass. And I thought to myself, would I make a better contribution to any band as a bass player than I would a guitar player? Because I was starting to understand drums and I was starting to understand how a rhythm section worked. And I really dug how a rhythm section actually drove the band. And I thought to myself, yes, I can make a better contribution as a bass player than I would as a guitar player, a keyboard player, or a vocalist. Because the first time I jammed live, I was actually on drums. The second time was keys, guitar, and vocals as a front man. And now all of a sudden it was like, okay, you know what? No, I didn't like what I was hearing. I didn't like what was around me. And I thought, you know what? There's amazing guitar players. There's amazing key players. There is amazing vocals.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand the rhythm section, and drummers always dug when I played bass. So would I make a better contribution as a bass player? Yes, I would. And I have been ever since I decided to make that decision.
Well, I don't have any fault with your decision. You're quite good at it.
Thank you very much.
Very talented. The rhythm section is actually the heart of me. I love the rhythm section.
You know what? Bass and drums drive the band.
Yeah, they're the engine. They're the engine.
Yeah, that's just it. And that's like my new podcast, Rhythm Section Rockcast.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Yeah, it's all about that. So
it's all about bass and drums and how it moves our soul.
The premiere was last week.
Yeah. And I've got a few. I mean, I won't mention who because they haven't actually said yes or no. But we've been talking about, different interviews with different amazing drummers and amazing bass players. But the second one, what I'm going to do is like much like the first one, I'm going to go on and talk about the bass players of Motown, because Motown.
Oh, wow.
excuse me, that whole genre really, helped me. And I always say to a younger bass player, people say to me, if you were to give one piece of advice to a younger bass player, what would it be? And I say, as a hobby, listen to Motown, because it's going to help you later. And you can thank me later for that one.
Yeah,
for sure.
Interesting. So
yeah.
Just give us a snapshot. I listened to your premiere broadcast. It was outstanding, incredibly professional. Content was amazing.
Cool.
Can you give listeners just a summary to entice them to go listen?
Yeah, it's Rhythm Section Rodcast. It's on Podbean, or you can get it on ronnierobson.com.
Mm-hmm.
My name. I just released the video. The website on Sunday, last Sunday. But anyway, it's about how I got to kind of point A to, I can't see C or say Z right now because I'm in the middle of my journey, but it's how it's all started. And it was five albums that I went to the record store. And in fact, I was in Lindsay, Ontario, and my dad was doing stuff and he wanted to, and I said, drop me off the record store. And I had saved my allowance back in the days where kids got allowance, right?
Yeah.
So I had saved my allowance all summer, and it was like August of that summer. And I went to the record store and I bought five albums. And you know what? Those five albums that I purchased just summarized what I was going to do next musically. And part of it was being a bass player. That's when I finally decided, I'm going to do this. So it was Stevie Wonder, I Wish, from, that whole thing with Nathan Watts on bass was absolutely amazing. And he stood out. He actually drove the band. Stevie actually played drums on that track.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I bought Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life. I bought ZZ Top Fandango because when I started jamming with other musicians, it was always blues, bass, heavy rock. And these guys were older than me, right? I was the younger guy in the room. And that was really cool. And it was Led Zeppelin, Song Remains the Same.
Mm.
I had bought a couple of Zeppelin albums prior, but that album, I mean, I had to learn every note from every song off that album. And then you had, Foghat, the Foghat Live album, which was amazing. A friend of mine had that album, and I thought it was really cool. But you know what? Actually, I think there were six albums, but there was five albums that really stood out.
Yeah.
And they were, you know what? They were the ones. Excuse me, that's for sure.
So when you learned every note from that Led Zeppelin albums, did you do it by ear? Or did you not cheat? Really?
Yeah, you know what? It is funny because I even say in the podcast, if I to count how many times I dropped the needle on that record, because I had to learn, there was a rhythm to the song. The first part of it was Celebration Day. And I had to learn every bit of that song because it just moved my soul. Like it just, like every time I heard the song, either recorded version or live version, I just like, it was everything to me.
Uh-huh.
So, but what it was, Shay, is I would learn the rhythm part of that, excuse me. And then the lead part was a little bit different. So I had to learn that. So I would bring the needle back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And of course, being a young guy, I used to stand up with the guitar strap and, you know, I'm ready to go, you know, like live. And it's like, could have this been a little bit easier if I sat down next to the turntable? Probably. But you know what? But you know what? And I did it. And I performed it live. I don't know how many years later, probably about 8 or 9 years later. And people came up to me after the show and went, you know what? You and the drummer just locked on. Like, you guys rocked that. I've never heard that so amazing before. So it's like, okay, did I make you happy? Cool.
That's cool. So did you continue to learn music and do you do that today? By ear as opposed to the sheets?
Yeah, mostly ear. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, technology has changed. If I have problems with something, I'm thinking, okay, I mostly do it by ear, but sometimes I'll go over to YouTube and like if I have to do a cover song,
or,
you know, whatever, I go over to YouTube and what will happen is sometimes I giggle because maybe I'm playing a lower register of the note that is actually there, but it doesn't sound right, but I'm getting it right, but it's not exactly how it's played. So what I'll do is I'll run through things on YouTube sometimes. And I mean, kids today, I mean, they have, the world is the oyster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is great.
That's outstanding to me. I believe it was Eddie Van Halen that couldn't read music. I'm not saying you couldn't, but he didn't read from the music. He did it from his ear.
Yeah, you know what? I've been classically trained so I can read music. I never go to that though.
Yeah.
Like it just seems like I never, like I'll listen to a song and say, okay, here we go. Okay,
yeah.
There's the verse, there's the chorus, there's the bridge,
yeah.
There's, you know, anything different? No, it's pretty structured the same. Okay, let me go for it.
Wow, that's talent, Ronnie.
But sometimes, you know, like sometimes I go, okay, not sounding right, excuse me, or I think, okay, how about live? Like someone who did something live. You know, maybe a bass player has been playing the same song for, you know, 20 years or whatever. They're going to change things up just to change it around.
Yeah.
And what I'll do is I'll go and I'll look live, you know, YouTube videos, or if someone, a bass player has done something, okay, here's the song live, but I'll check that out and just, you know, there's so many great players out there now. And as I said, technology has changed.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, where I've learned stuff in 40 years, kids are learning it in 7, right? Maybe not the same feeling. Maybe not that, you know, I can really tell, you know, about heart and soul.
Yeah.
When I watch people do stuff, it's like, okay, you're 20 years old and you're playing a song that was recorded 40 years. Yeah, you did a good job, but there's no heart and soul in it. There's not. And you know what? That's just, it's a time and space, and that's just the thing. You live it or you don't.
Yeah. Well, your classical training at the conservatory would have definitely added to your craft, would it have not?
Yeah, it drove me nuts. Shay, it drove me nuts.
Why?
You know, my sister is funny because going back to my childhood, my sister she's 3 years older than me. And she started before me. And it was funny because she would play things, right? And, but she stuck by the book, where I didn't stick by the book. And it drove my piano teacher crazy, because sometimes, like, yeah, I'd read sheet music. Sheet music was brought in front of me, and I would read it, and I would, you know, I would learn it. I loved it. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't like classical piano, Mozart, you know, Chopin, that stuff wasn't for me. But I thought, okay, it's a music study. So, but I would watch my sister play, and she would read by the book. She would just do what she did, and that was it. And then, you know, my sister would finish, you know, her practice. And then my mom would say to me, go practice the piano. I'd say, okay. So next thing you know, I'm on the piano, and I'd play my stuff, and all of a sudden I would add like an accent note, you know, and I would even sing the accent note, right? Just to bring it out more, just to let you know, hey, I added an accent note, check it out. And then I would do it in front of my piano teacher. And she would just say, okay, don't do that. We need to concentrate on. And I thought, after a little while, my sister would be playing. And my sister kind of, I even said to my sister, like, do you know this song? My sister was an album buyer like me. She would go out to the record store and she would buy different albums. Mm-hmm. And between her and I, we would have like a great record collection, right? We were kind of the same genres, but she would branch out and I would branch out, and she would listen to stuff and say, you know, that's cool. And I'd say, yeah, you know, that's cool too, right? But I remember her, like, I would say to her, can you like play this or play that, or just like, let's jam. And she couldn't do it. And it was really weird, because it almost become textbook to me, where like I realized that she would be textbook, but I would not be. I would learn probably more from a textbook myself than she would. So it was really weird, you know, like, and I think I made it to grade 9. In the Royal Conservatory of Music. I mean, I was doing really good. And the stuff that I would learn on piano, I would learn, like, it stuck with me. And I remember going out for a Christmas recital, like all of a sudden, you know, we had like, I don't know how many students, maybe about 11 or 12 students from different, you know, age groups. And we played in a local church, and that was in Dunsford. And that was really cool. But anyway, what happened was me being me, as I went out, and I already knew what I was going to play. And I was playing Jingle Bells for the audience. So I went out and I put my sheet music on the piano, and I started playing. And next thing you know, I got a tap on the shoulder. And it was my music teacher, Mrs. Herbert. And she stopped and she turned the music around because I had it upside down. But,
oh, really?
You know what I mean? And of course, everyone started laughing, right? And I mean, you know, it was a great time for me, because, I mean, growing up, I had the best life ever. I mean, you know, my parents owned a cottage resort. I was in heaven. I had everything I needed and more, but I didn't realize it then. But I was still just a happy kid, and music, learning theory and learning everything that needed to be learned. I was totally into it, but I just wanted more. Like I wanted to, yeah, classical piano is great. Learning, you know, music theory is fantastic. But I want to rock. Like I want to get out there and I just want to let go. And I did.
Is that what attracted you to
yeah,
rock?
Yeah, you know, like watching stuff on television, you know, you'd have Bachman Turner Overdrive, you'd have, you know, April Wine, you'd have all these bands. And I just like, that's what I want to do. That's where I want to end up. That's where I think I would be the most happiest. And yeah, it worked out. It totally worked out, Shay.
So because your sister was into music and you had a sort of a shared record collection, was she one of the greatest influences on the music that you listened to? Or was it the people you hung around with or your own individual taste?
You know what, Shay? It was both. It was both. And I think we had mutual friends too. And we had a great, like, not only did our family have a great musical background. I mean, my uncle wrote for Moxie Whitney and Guy Lombardo. Right. And he had muscular dystrophy. Like he was amazing.
Wow.
But I think what it was is we were just into that time period in the 70s that music was everything, you know, like we always had the radio blasting. We always, our friends did too. And our friends had similar music similarities to us, you know, it could be anywhere from Jethro Tull to Max Webster or, you know, Rush or Zeppelin or, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Like we always had the same thing. So my sister, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it sort of happened to me that way too, because I was influenced by my parents' influences, like, believe it or not, Herb Albert, Plastic Line, Johnny Cash, and my older siblings, because we have a larger family, brought home Alan Parsons Project,
nice.
Queen, you know, all of that. And then my own influences and what I like. My favorite band is Aerosmith.
Nice. Nice. In fact, my wife and I were talking about Aerosmith the other night. We went to the Aerosmith last concert in Toronto.
I was there.
And oh my God.
I was there. it was good, eh?
We had such a fun night. I was with my sister and her boyfriend at the time. And we had, oh my God, we had such a good time. And we have it, like we even had a great time later. But you said Patsy Cline, and I have and still have a major crush on that girl, Patsy Cline. Oh my God. When she sings.
Oh yeah. Buttermilk.
The world stops for me. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Most definitely. She's amazing.
I still do Patsy Cline nights.
Nice.
I want to talk about one of your releases, Numb. It was written with Steph Hahn and Vinny Appice and yourself.
Yeah, you know what? Steph Hahn wrote that song. We redid that song, Vinny Appice and me. And Vinny Appice was drummer for Black Sabbath and Ronnie James Dio. He played with even John Lennon. Vinny Appice. He's an amazing guy. You know what? He's a really nice guy too. And so Steph, and we, Numb is one of my favorites. In fact, we did a lyric video for the song too, and it is amazing.
Yeah,
you want to hear Numb?
Let's listen to it now.
Let's go.
Such a nice place to be, where nothing is real and nothing really matters. Come on, sink a dirty tears into me, 'cause I'm already numb. You're planting flowers in concrete when you're playing with my soul. Say,
had a chance to hear that, see the lyric video, but I'm definitely going to check it out after this podcast.
Yeah, a guy wrote it. He actually did it for nothing. This guy, he is really good. He's done stuff for a lot of bands. So everyone's kind of saw the significance of Hollywood Monsters, and so did I. And that's why I kind of, you know, reached out to staff. We met online, and you know, it's just one of those things where I kind of fell into, and I'm glad I fell into it. As I said, he's a really nice guy, and I'm really appreciating being involved with you know, the whole project.
So this is part of the Hollywood Monsters.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, you know what, Steph and I, we kind of met online, and it was a weird thing, because I woke up one morning and somebody shared a video, and it was with Steph, with I can't remember who it was now, Oh man. Anyway, they shared a video and I went, this is really cool. Like, this guy is good, man.
Yeah, his vocals are insane.
Oh yeah. And I reached out to Steph and I went, hey man, this is really, really good. And he goes, thanks. You know, like I started talking about the recording of that song. And we kind of hooked up and, you know, he got to know about me and I got to know about him a little more. And one day he said to me, send me a message. He says, you know, I've done this and this and this and this. I don't know what to do next. And I said, what you need to do is release another Hollywood Monsters album, because what you've done with that is amazing. So we had done just prior to that conversation, we have done a few things, a couple of David Bowie songs we recorded together with Sasha Tukach, which Sasha used to play with Platinum Blonde, another Canadian band, right? So we recorded with him and we started doing a few things. And then the conversation was, you know, I don't know what to do next. And he's, you know, I don't think he was looking for much feedback, but I did say to him, I said, you know, the things that you did with Holly Monster School, I think you should revisit that, because you've got an amazing, you know, there's amazing background for that. So he's like, okay. So we started talking more and more, and he asked me, he says, you know, we'd be interested in doing any bass for it. And I said, yeah, you know, of course. So, you know, we contacted Vinny Appice and it was like, you know, here's what we got. Here's what we're doing. Would you be interested? Yeah. So it was like basically Steph, Vinny and I as the nucleus for the album Thriving on Chaos. So, and then things started to get really interesting because Steph basically came up with all the material for the album, which is fantastic. And there was one song in particular, A Scream Looking for a Mouth. And we were recording that. And it's funny because, like, he surprised me throughout this album. You know, him and I, we basically produced it, Steph and I. It was engineered by him, myself, and another dude who works with Danko Jones. Again, another Canadian, you know Danko. Right.
Yeah.
His name is Vic Florentia. So we got into this album. We started talking back and forth. What are we going to do? Here's what we're going to do. We started to do demos back and forth. But A Scream Looking for a Mouth, I remember Steph had that already recorded and we sent it off to Vinny. Vinny recorded the drums. He sent it back and there was a guitar solo. And what happened was there was a little section just before the guitar solo. And it was like more like a pre-chorus or a pre-solo kind of thing. And I did a little bass wah thing.
Yeah.
I hooked up my, you know, I thought, you know what'd be really cool? We got this, you know, two bar thing. Let me, you know, drop a little wah wah in there just to hold the time. You know, make it a little, you know, show some dynamic and throw it in. Next thing you know, it wasn't about 4 days later, maybe 3 days later, Steph is working on the track. He sends it back to me. And I was really curious, of course, what he did with the bass wah-wah thing before his solo. Well, he replaced his solo and he talked to Don Airey and Don Airey has played with Deep Purple. He's played with everyone. He's a fantastic keyboard player. And Don Airey replaced his solo and he also used like a wah in the solo. And that was just like, I almost fell off my chair when I heard that. when I said to him, like, I thought, is that Steph doing that? Like, is this, and he goes, no, man, it's Don Airey. I got Don Airey in here. And I mean, the album consists, like, not only Stefan or Vinny Appice and I, but it's also Don Airey, Danko Jones, Alexis Von Craven played a drum track on a tune. He's a great, great drummer from Toronto. Greg Godovitz, you know Greg, right, from Gatto and Flood.
I've never met
Fred
him.
Fred Meeko. You've never met him?
No.
Oh, come on. Everyone's met Greg.
I think Shay's everywhere.
Oh, my God. And if you're female, you know, like, oh, geez. Holy smokes.
No. But continue.
No. You know what? We've got Glenn Drover, ex-Megadeth, Testament. I reached out to Glenn. I said, hey, man,
can you
play on a track? And I did a couple albums with him. So, you know, he's like, yeah, cool. I'm into it. Here's the song. You know, do it. But Jim Green, we got Fred Meeko, Tommy Denander played lead guitar on Drop Dead. We did a Gatto song, Greg Godovitz, and Tommy Denander actually did the lead, and he mastered it. And Tommy's got a really cool resume. He keeps on going back to Alice Cooper, either in production, writing, or even performing. Yeah, so he's on the album too. And I mean, just, you know, it ended up to be, what, how many Canadians on this album? Plus, we got the late and great Ted McKenna. Ted passed away in 2019, and we had a drum track.
Wow.
And Steph kind of wrote a song around his drum track, rewrote a song, actually. It's called Running Uphill. And, I mean, I saw Ted twice playing drums with Michael Schenker Group. So it's an all-star cast. Mm-hmm. Like the whole, if you were to look into Hollywood Monsters as a whole, there's an amazing, oh yeah, definitely. And it's all headed by Steph Hunt.
Yeah, it's all-star. Yeah, and Steph did the artwork for that album, did he not?
No, it you know what? It was out of Brazil.
Oh, he did?
No.
I thought he did. You know what?
He is an amazing artist, though.
Oh, I know. I've commissioned some of his work.
Steph is amazing. You know what? He's an all-around great guy. I mean, you know what? I'm hoping that he gets picked up by, you know, a major act. Someone that really needs help, and Steph will help them, definitely. You know, I could see him doing Foreigner. I could see him doing, you know, like any real classic rock. Because he does everything. Like, he sings, he writes, he plays keyboards, he's a guitar player. And you know what? He's a good bass player, too. That cat's a good bass player. Oh, yeah. All around great multi-instrumentalist.
No, he's multi-talented.
He does.
And he works very hard at his craft. I have him on my Facebook, and every day, almost, he's showcasing his talent. With songs. It's amazing. Let's talk about the Pat Travers song that you worked with the former Megadeth guitarist Glenn Drover with a song called Untitled.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, every time I have an artist give me an untitled track, I go, dude, you wrote the song. How did it come out without a title? So, yeah, explain that to me.
You know what? Blame Pat Travers for that. You know what? Another Canadian. Blame Pat Travers. He it was song called Untitled, and he wrote it. And I mean, it's an amazing tune. And what had happened was, is Glenn and I would hang out. Glenn and I basically lived about maybe a 10-15 minute drive away from each other. And my business partner in Amplitude Films, they worked together. And I went out to see, which is, you know, another amazing story in itself, is I took my wife to see Megadeth. She loved Megadeth, right? She's a big Megadeth fan. And I was, she was there to see Megadeth, but I was there to see Heaven and Hell, which, you know, Geezer Butler, Ronnie James Dio, Tony Iommi, and Vinny Appice on drums. So anyway, we go to the show, have a great time. You know, we go out to dinner, and I text my business partner. I said, "Hey, man, we just came back from Heaven and Hell and Megadeth. Had a great time. I'll talk to you tomorrow," because he sent me a message on something that we needed to discuss. And I said, "You know what? I'll still be up early. Let's talk." So I said, "You know, upon conversation the next morning, I said to him, I said, "You know that the drummer and the bass player are brothers, and they're from Toronto." And he goes, "Yeah, Glenn and Sean." He goes, "I used to work with Glenn." I said, "You're kidding me." So it wasn't, you know, maybe a few weeks later, just out of conversation and things, Glenn and I hooked up. And you know what? And it wasn't never about music. It was always about, you know, like just life in general. You know, like he was married, he had a kid. Now his kid's in university, which is great. And I mean, you know, we talked, we'd burn down patios everywhere we went. And it was such an amazing time. And I remember him sending me a message and saying, "You know, we've known each other for a couple of years. I've never heard you play a note." And I went, "Cool. Okay, give me something to play. Like, what do you want? You know, what do you want me to do?" So he sent me a song he was working on, which from Pat Travers, a cover, untitled. And he played keys. He did the drums. But he said, "You know, I'd like you to play bass on this." So I did. And I looked up the and I said, "You know what? There's really no place for me to go but the original. Yeah. The only thing I can do is kind of crank up the original sound. You know, would you be interested in that?" And then I played it. And next thing you know, he's like adding it. It was never released, though. That song was never released. And it's on the website. And I added it to the website because I'm kind of, you know, like, I'm kind of proud of it. Man, it's great. It's a great song. And thanks to Pat Travers for writing that song, by the way. Yeah.
You should be proud of it. It's a great track. Yeah. Awesome. Do you want to listen to it right now?
Let's go. This is Untitled. Glenn Drover, Ronnie Robson, Pat Travers, tune Untitled.
No, I really enjoyed the track. I really enjoyed it. So you've collaborated with quite a few people, groups, bands. Do you want to talk about them, or do you want me to throw out some names?
Yeah, you know what? The thing about it is the bio states, and it was funny because I didn't write this bio. And when I looked at all the names, I went, holy cow, did I do that? You know?
Yeah, it's outstanding, Ronnie. Okay, I'm going to read them because you're not. Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, Whitesnake, Deep Purple, Megadeth, Testament, Quiet Riot, Blue Oyster Cult, Thin Lizzy, Prophecy, Ronnie James Dio, Platinum Blonde, Hollander, Danko Jones, Gatto, Heaven and Hell, Jeff Rotel, and the Michael Shunter Group, and Hollywood Monsters. You've been very busy with top talent, Liz, so you're part of that group, I would say.
Well, yeah. What it is I've recorded with current or ex members of
same thing
those bands, right? And it's cool because you know what? And I'm getting emails from people saying, you know, hey, I'm looking for a bass player to, to tour with, or my band's looking for a bass player to tour with. And again, I won't mention any names right now. We'll leave it open. But so I've got the recording end of things down, which is cool, which is great. But, you know, also the touring end of things, which is amazing because now I get to leave the house. And that will be really cool because I've been, you know, I retired in February 29th.
Yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
Leap year, last year. Yeah, thank you. And now, and the thing about it was Hollywood Monsters was supposed to tour that summer. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to take when I can go, I'm going to go. I'm going to rehearse. I'm going to get, you know, my proverbial crap together and make sure that when we do tour, that I will just be absolutely outstanding in this band. And we were supposed to, it was Steph Hond, Vinny Appice agreed to tour as part of Hollywood Monsters. And we had an amazing guitar player who played with, Ronnie James Dio, and Vinny was in the band at the same time, a period of time with Ronnie James Dio. His name is Tracy G. He's absolutely fantastic. He's from California. And it was, we're going to do Northeastern states into Canada. So we would tour the states and then come back into Canada. And then we would decide what to do. But everyone kind of agreed to it. This is what we're going to do. Pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, we're all at home. So I got other bands reaching out to me now saying, you know, this is what's going on. If we need you, would you be okay? Would you be cool with it? And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I get to leave the house.
Yeah.
And I really want to leave my house. Like I love my house, but I want to leave.
Yeah, you're a people person. You're a people person. I can understand that. I can understand that. So do you anticipate getting back into touring with Hollywood Monsters?
You know what? I would love that. And put it this way. Once things start to open up, I am going to say to the guys, we have to do this. We have to get out, especially this lineup. You know, if we had a keyboard player or whatever, fantastic. But with this lineup, I mean, Tracy G is an amazing guitar player. Vinny Appice, his resume speaks for itself. So does Steph. I mean, it would be, I think, I don't think you'd ever see us not smile on stage together if we entered it. You know what I mean? Like, it would just be one of these things. So answer to your question, yes, 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 and yes.
Good. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the next track I'd like to talk about, Heroes. You sent me an alternative version that was never released. Incredible vocals. It had also a lot of top artists on that track as well.
Yeah. You know what? It was funny because Stefan had already recorded that song. And and he was like, okay, you know, this was supposed to be released for, supposed to be released so people could, why can't I think about what?
A demo?
No, it was supposed to be released so people would hear it and they would go, I love it. And then they would donate money and then the money would go somewhere else, right? Or to
a fundraiser. Right,
to a few different charities. Of course, that never happened. So he was sitting on that. So, but
okay.
It was the, what I call the Canadian version, because I was the last to put kind of the finger on it. But what it is, Steph Hunt, Vinny Appice, Michael Sweet, Jenny Hahn, Danko Jones, Mats Levin, Ryan Roxy. I mean, Ryan Roxy's an amazing guitar player. Darren Crisp, Alessandro Di Vecchio, and he's amazing. He's amazing keyboard player. Andy Kuntz, Ron Bumblefoot, Ty. I mean, you know what? Rudy Sarzo and I finished the bass duties, so we still have plans for this one. They're still, you know what? It's like, okay, we're all doing our different things, but Rudy Sarzo's a great bass player. I mean, he played with Quiet Riot and Whitesnake and like Blue Easter Cult. He's played with everyone. And he's a great animal lover. Like he's a great guy. And when I finished with the City of Toronto, it was municipal licensing and standards, like bylaw for animal services. So,
I didn't know that. I knew it was bylaw, but I didn't know it was animal
services. The last, I think, 6, maybe 7 years, closer to 7, I think. But anyway, we were talking about that, and I said, you know what, proceeds go to City of Toronto Animal Services because they do a lot of great work, and a lot of countries and different provinces and states around the world have actually, you wouldn't believe how many have contacted City of Toronto and said, you know, I really like what you're doing with this program. Can you explain more about it? And they wanted numbers and stuff like that. Wow. So, and it wasn't until what happened was the City of Toronto released a thing on social media about, you know, you see people, homeless people with pets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that people think of is, oh my God, that poor dog, right? But that dog and that person are best friends, right? And a lot of shelters are now opening up to allow pets because they know that, yeah, these two beings belong together.
Yeah.
So what happens is, of course, they need crates. You know, they need like a cage to go into, and they sleep right next to their owner. And then, you know, 7 o'clock, they wake up, they have breakfast, the dog eats, they go out, you know, and they spend the day outside, and then they come back again. And I thought, how many phone calls have I received from, you know, from people, from different people in the City of Toronto saying, hey, I'm getting phone calls on this, or city council saying, we need to do something about this. And I went, yeah, well, we're going to do something about that. And here's what you're going to do, you know, and and I pissed a lot of people off, which is good. Which is great. You know, you got to remember something is politicians are in it for, you know, a minimum of 4 years, and they do stuff for votes, you know, the majority, and people that work for the City of Toronto were in it for 30 plus.
Yeah, true
enough. You know what? And we make things happen, you know? And that's where I talked to Steph about this too. And I said, you know, like, this is what's going on in the city, in my city, and maybe other cities will, you know, because of other people calling in. Man, we're making an impact, you know? We are. And so Steph went, you know what? Let's do it. So we're still working on you know, that platform. What I want to do is I want to talk to a few media people in regards to, you know, getting it out to the different accredited media, so that, you know, maybe they'll do a story on it, and then maybe they can, you know, we'll get more vision, and we'll get more downloads. If we get more downloads, the City of Toronto Animal Services and the people of the City of Toronto will get more, you know, what they need. And not only that, is other people will look in and say, hey, you know what? You know, we noticed this. This is really cool. You know, we want to do the same thing. And you know what? We'll help them out too. Why the hell not?
That'd be awesome. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I definitely, a lot of the larger fundraising projects started with one idea, one city, and blossomed to a national, national wave of support.
Well, exactly. And you know what? We're here to help everyone, you know. Yeah. As you said, you know, like, a lot of people say, oh, you know, rock stars, rock stars, rock stars. There's a lot of good rock stars out there. You know, I'm not one of them. I never consider myself a rock star.
You know, also, don't be self-depreciating. You're running.
I walk into a room, somebody yells out rock star. I always turn around and look to see who's there. Are you kidding? I'll never want to be known as a rock star. Just, you know what? Ronnie Robson, nice guy, pretty good bass player.
Okay. We'll just whisper when you come in. So we're going to listen to that track next.
Heroes, the Canadian version, Hollywood Monsters. Let's go. Enjoy.
And you, I love the story behind Heroes, and I absolutely love this track. And Steph is the vocals on that?
Yeah, well, you know what? Steph, Danko, Jenny.
Yeah, like, we got okay.
We got a lot on the, it's like shared vocal duty, and they all did an amazing, amazing job. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Yep. I loved it. It was very inspirational.
Yep.
And it will do well when you finally do the fundraising.
Well, yeah.
And keep me in the loop.
Oh, I will.
In the loop.
And you know what? The crazy thing is, it's just like listening when I get tracks back from Vinny. I always, you know, used to giggle and say, you know, like I'm recording with Vinny. Well, same thing with Rudy Sarzo. It was like, okay, now I have to share a track with Vinny. So I got his track and I thought, okay, how am I going to, no, man, I'm just going to play along. I'm just going to, you know, there's some, so we shared it. It's about 50-50, maybe 52-48%, but I mean, in favor of him, but it's all there.
You're from Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's my hometown and where I lived most of my life. I'm trying to picture what area you lived in, because it seems like a lot of areas in Toronto, because you had very tight community and tight circle of friends. Like, where in Toronto was that?
You know what? I was born in Scarborough, Brimley and Eglinton.
Okay.
And then about 4 years of age, in 1969, my parents bought a cottage resort in the Kawarthas in between Lindsay and Bob Cajun on Sturgeon Lake on the North Shores. But my grandparents on both sides of my family are in Leslieville. My grandparents on my father's side, Dundas and Broadview, and my grandparents, where I spent most of my time, was at Carlaw in Eastern, Carlaw and Queen area.
Yeah.
With Broadview in, you know, Queen area. And you know what? When I started working for the City of Toronto, it was on Eastern Avenue right by my grandparents' house. And when I retired,
yeah, I'm very familiar with
it. It was
the area.
Right by my grandparents, the same yard, the same building. It's amazing. Like, to turn it all around. But I went to, after a little while, my parents split up and I started living in Leslieville in my grandparents' house. And high school was Danforth Tech. So I met a lot of people in the neighborhood, and I didn't, because I was kind of a recluse, you know, like I stayed to myself a lot back then. I just worked on music, and I just worked on meeting girls, and I met a few.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting. I lived in every area in Toronto.
Did you?
Yeah. My favorite part was Dovercourt and Bloor.
Really? Dovercourt and Bloor?
Yeah. I lived there for 3.5 years. I loved the culture. I love the Portuguese community.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
My children are all really? Portuguese. Yeah, they're beautiful.
Oh.
Beautiful combination of the Portuguese and English, French.
See?
No, but it's one of my favorite areas in Toronto.
Yeah.
Other than Greektown on the Danforth.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you had your sections, right? Like back in the back, especially the late 50s, 60s, into the 70s, everyone kind of gravitated into their own little area, you know? And that's what I love about Canada. You know, we're so diverse, you know, like we're a salad bowl, a huge salad bowl. And it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, you know what? On my mother's side, it was Irish, and on my dad's side, it was Scottish, but they immigrated to Newcastle, England. His father. So I mean, you know what? The whole area down there. I mean, I could walk with a camera crew and tell stories about the entire area and buildings and, you know, and make it kind of personal, too, because that's, you know, where my family grew up. That's. And I feel it. And I lost it. You know what I mean? When I retired, I kind of went, when is the last time am I going to be here?
I can see that. There's a lot of history to the city people don't know.
And it's amazing. That city of Toronto is an amazing city. It really is. It is. I mean, I can walk in every neighborhood and show you something, right? I mean, I know it, right? From working with the city of Toronto. And that working with the city actually afforded me to branch out and see other areas. I mean, I could go way back, like first year I worked for the city of Toronto, it was Old Weston Road in St. Clair. And every Friday we would drop off down on Junction Road. There was a place that smoked fish and there was a guy that knew the guy in there and he would get us smoked fish. And back in those days, I mean, no one had a problem. Everyone was friendly. There was a kind of a code of ethics. And I mean, Fridays, it was like we'd finish maybe 45 minutes earlier. We'd go get fish. We'd open up the bottle of wine, you know, and we were 2 minutes from the yard and we would have a beautiful late lunch and everyone was happy. Nowadays, I mean, you know, you'd be ratted on and arrested. And that's the way our world is going. But that's how things were. You know, we got the job done. We made sure the job was done, but we had our fun too.
Yeah. It was a good time.
Oh yeah.
They'll come back.
That's it.
I honestly believe they will.
I think so.
Well, I'll die trying.
I know. I know.
So where do you think the industry is right now and what do you feel it needs to get out of this whole COVID thing? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, no, we got to wait for people just to smarten up and go, you know what? I'm fed up with being at home. I'm going to toe the line. I mean, you still got people saying, I'm not wearing a mask in Walmart. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I mean, you know, our numbers are going down. The music industry as a whole, I mean, you can put out album after album. You're going to make pennies doing it. Touring is where it's at. So if people, if people like seeing live music, they want things to go. They want to be able to on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday night or any night or any time of day that they want to go and sit down in a restaurant, not comply, then it's their fault. I mean, I don't know how many musicians are wanting to say basically what I'm about to say. And it is, look, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
We want to get out and play. You want to come and see us. We want the world to be back to normal. So do you. Don't be a dick. Let's go. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and not only the music industry, it's like other industries as well. You know, it's like, come on, everyone. And we go, oh, I'm not going to toe the line. Toe the line? What, wear a mask? Who cares? Let's get the numbers down. You know what? How many people that I've seen online who 6 months or 7 or 8 months ago, you know, like, oh, it's a conspiracy, this, that, and the other. They would post, I just lost my grandmother to COVID, or I lost my great aunt. And it's like, where I would never in a million years say anything to them. But in hindsight being 2020, I'm thinking, oh my God. Because was it someone else that spoke like you or thought about you that actually, you know, had an impact on that situation? Like, don't think about yourself. Think about others. Like, forget about musicians. Forget about us. Forget about the movie industry. Forget about everyone. It's like, let's worry about the restaurant owners. Let's worry about our own family. Let's worry about the family that of friends and family and people that you do not know. Okay. Let's worry about them. Could I do something to endanger someone else? Okay. Is that being a dick? No, it's called being a human being. Right? So be a human being and help out other people. Don't worry. As soon as people start doing that, restaurants will open, movie theaters will open. You'll start to see bands. You'll start to see, you know, things will come alive. But help out your fellow human beings. Don't, like, get offline and stop doing this friggin', you know, conspiracy theory crap. Okay, where the virus came from, we're gonna find out. We're gonna know. Okay, we're gonna, you know, it doesn't take, it's just gonna take a little bit of time to figure that out. But don't, you know what I mean? Like, just because you're not liking something, that something is going on, you know what? Think about other people, because people are dying because other people aren't thinking. And that's what it basically comes down to.
Fair enough. I agree with you. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? And the final thing is, COVID, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. Ronnie told you. Ronnie Dog told you.
I'm telling you. You don't want to wear a mask. Stay the hell home. Don't go anywhere. Yeah. Don't go anywhere. Wash your friggin' hands.
I wear a mask. I agree with you. So
yeah.
Can you tell us again where to go to get to sign up and subscribe to that Rockcast?
Oh, the Rhythm Section Rockcast.
Yeah. You
know what? They can get it through my website, which I just released on Sunday. Was it February 28th on Sunday? Because we have to do dates. But if they go there, there's a section on the top called Rockcast, but it's part of Podbean. It's called Rhythm Section Rockcast. And in fact, the last Hollywood Monsters album can be purchased online through my website as well. It's on there. And I share the proceeds with the guys. So,
oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I told staff, I said, no problem. Here's what I'm going to do. Let's do it. Da-da-da. There's no online thing. I mean, we've got, For physical copies, it's Bicky Music in Japan and Die Hard Music in Brazil. So
that's good. So everything we talked about in the show, they can access through your new website.
They can access, yes, ronnierobson.com.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Ronnie, and sharing your music and your stories and that's great. It's great.
Shay, my pleasure. And you know what? Knowing your husband, I want you to give him a big hug for me. Okay? Right? Give him a huge one and tell him his Walmart card is in the mail.
Okay.
Okay?
That's a hidden joke, but
yeah, totally hidden joke. But you know what? The Walmart card is in the mail. Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you everyone for listening.
The Walmart card from Johnny Dog. All right. Thanks for your time, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for tonight. Episodes run every Wednesday. Who shows up or what we talk about, who knows right now. Live on the edge. Just tune in and enjoy. See you next Wednesday. From my pad to yours, After Hours. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.